Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 190, being recorded on the 2nd of August, 2017, with special guest Tara Raj. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Evan, and our special guest Tara. And of course, before we talk to Tara about a very interesting tool that her team has built, let's get our listeners caught up on the Azure updates. And guys, thanks for putting some stuff in the show notes there. Anything good, Kale, you want to start with?
Yeah.
This is the obligatory blockchain one.
Blockchain.
So go ahead.
Of course. Finally, we got another blog post out here. No, yeah, we had an event, and we had a podcast at the Microsoft Ready event a few weeks back, and basically, at that event, we also made an announcement about enterprise smart contracts. So there's a blog post out there. We'll put the link in the show notes. But it's a pretty long blog post, but basically it talks about, you know, our journey here and how we kind of set out and made it easy to spin up infrastructure for blockchain for quite some time now. And now the next step is to make this ecosystem better. And that is enterprise smart contracts. And just really quickly, the idea of a public smart contract being fully transparent, not a lot of privacy around it, doesn't appeal so much to enterprise. And so these are specific tooling that we built into Azure in our platform to make those more enterprise friendly, to add the features that enterprise demand. So that's like a 10,000 foot view, but it's really a combination of efforts from a programming framework that we built, as well as tooling we built into, in this case, the Ethereum, but it will expand to other protocols, as well as, you know, the work inside Azure.
So, Kale, is this the stuff where you write the cryptlets and they run inside the enclave?
That's part of it, yeah, okay. But it's really around telling that story. And you guys know, any of our listeners that are developers, when you're building applications, separating the different tiers of the application, the data tier and the business logic and the kind of front end or service tier, it's really about that process, bringing that to blockchain.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Thanks for that update. And Evan, what do you
actually? So I'm going to throw two things in that are not in there, just because I ran into them tonight and just kind of want to reinforce them for everybody. So first thing, and I got to give credit to a colleague of mine, Michael Jolly, who turned me on to this. I don't know if the rest of you all have multiple Azure subscriptions, but it used to drive me crazy because I've got about 30 of them because I've got access to some internal ones as well. And they're all a bunch of GUIDs and could never tell which one was which. Well, turns out right in the portal, when you're looking at anything that shows your subscription, there's a little link that says edit this, I think, and you can go change the name to anything you want that's handy and short and easy. And I've been in the portal for I don't know how many years and didn't know you could do that, right?
So that's amazing. I didn't know either. So like we get these MSDN subscriptions, so I can actually put valid names in there now instead of having MSDN 1, MSDN 2, and all that.
Yep. You can change it something that means something to you. So, and then the other thing is, I was trying to reproduce an issue one of our customers was having with Azure CLI and Key Vault. And I had worked on it, you know, last week at the house, and I had Bash on Ubuntu on Windows, you know, the Linux subsystem running, and, you know, but it takes about 20 or 30 minutes to download the bits and set it up and restart and get everything going. And I had this, I didn't have that set up at work, and, you know, I was pinging one of my friends to see if he had it. And he said, well, why don't you go try the Cloud Shell? Went out to Cloud Shell. In like 10 minutes, I'm up, I'm running, I've copied my, you know, ARM templates up to my cloud, you know, storage account, run the CLI command, done, in and out in like 15 minutes. It was great. So I definitely recommend people check that out.
That's really good. You know, since you talked about, trying to run these scripts, I've been running some PowerShell scripts, and Sometimes PowerShell will throw these really weird errors, right? It's like some aggregate exception or something like that, right? And it just doesn't tell you anything. And it's been driving me up the wall because I've been trying to create a Service Fabric cluster recently, and I kept on getting this error. So I figured out that if you put the minus debug option on the PowerShell script, it actually shows you all the input output messages that it's sending to the ARM the Resource Manager endpoint. And very clearly, I saw right away what the problem was at that point. Which was turned out to be another problem. It said that my subscription couldn't deploy images into US East 2 for some reason. I don't know what the deal was that. I didn't know why it restricted me, but I had to put it in South Central US. I was forced to do that. But that was the error, underlying. I would never have found that, had I not turned on that minus debug option. So, anyway.
What the other extension of that, if you throw a dash of verbose on the end of it as well, you'll get
Yes.
even more information, right? If
Yes.
debug's not enough.
Yep.
So, yeah. No, that's a great tip. It'll save your behind sometimes when you're just can't quite figure out what's going wrong.
Yep. So, I'm a web developer most of the time, and I do like this the new update to the app service or app service domains, as they call them now, which is
This is the isolated stuff, right?
no. This is now where you can manage custom domains for your app for your web apps.
Oh,
Previously,
okay.
yeah. So it's I guess we're now managing some of those top-level domains, a few of them to get started, right? Not all of them. Like I think some of the US ones, the UK ones, and the ones in the India ones, I believe, are currently supported. But you can now, directly say, I want to create a web app, and oh, by the way, for production, this is the custom domain name I want to give it. And you can go in there and pay for the domain name right there and there. So
Right.
and then manage them. So yeah, so that's something new that came out in preview. And this other update about the resource policy aliases. I guess I never knew this existed, but I think this becomes even more important now, where in your ARM template you can define certain restrictions for some of the values that your organization uses, right? So if you I guess if you're trying to create a VM of a particular size, and you don't want people going crazy and creating a like a 64 node VM or something like that, and you're burning a bunch of cache, you can limit the what they can put in that particular node of the ARM template in terms of the SKUs, for example. And so it's a quite a flexible system. They call them policy aliases, where you can create this limitation, and it has a lot of advantages, especially for enterprises, as I mentioned, because they can restrict what their departments can do, when in their Azure subscription.
Actually, I will bet money, Sajid, that that policy is what's keeping you from deploying to East US 2. That's actually a lot of a lot of the internal subscriptions we get.
Nice.
We put requirements and say, hey, so we only want us in certain data centers, and we want to reserve certain places for customers, and almost guarantee that's what was going on under the covers.
Good call there. Yes, I think you're right. Yep. Okay, what else that's here that you like? I saw there was a SQL data warehouse one, Evan. Did you see that?
Yeah, I was going to push that one out to next week. I didn't want to call out the we've added the kind of instantaneous file recovery for Azure backup. Right. So which that's great, right? I just want one file. I don't want to go through the whole restore. I just need my individual file. Let me get it back and then move on my way. I think that's great to see that extended capability now.
Excellent. And how about this VM chooser? That's got to be that's got to come in handy for people, because we have all these various VM families, and it can be confusing, right? Some of them have GPU enabled, and some of them have got more cores, and some have SSD, and some have more memory, and whatnot. And it's kind of confusing as to which one is good for you. So they've got this website called the VM Chooser, which kind of boils it down for you and helps you pick the right. It asks you a couple of questions, and then will tell you which are the cheapest SKUs for you. which I think is good.
That's really cool because, you know, there's it feels like we have the entire alphabet there now.
you know, true.
With letters, and you're like, okay, I just want something that has fast disk and lots of CPU. Great. Right. Okay, just come in and do this instead of, well, we have the Gs and we have these.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. All right. So good. So I think that's a quick good roundup for all the updates this week. Thanks, guys. So let's turn the mic over to our special guest, Tara. Tara, thanks for joining us today. And please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So my name is Tara Raj. I'm a program manager on the SQL Server on Linux team, specifically working in the tool space.
Wow, SQL Server on Linux. We never thought that day would ever come.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a team name that I never thought I'd hear several years ago.
Yep, people thought it was an April Fool's joke.
That's awesome.
So I know we're going to talk about something different today, but what's the response been for SQL Server for Linux? And I know we're not going to talk about that specifically today, but just curious since you mentioned it.
Yeah, overall, it's been overwhelmingly positive. The community has been super supportive. Every time we go and give demos, people have a similar reaction to that which you guys had. And mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going at it. It'll be GA relatively soon.
Okay, and we got to get you back on at that time to talk about it when it does go GA. But let's Absolutely. Talk about this tool that you guys had written, which is really nice, MS SQL Scripter. So why don't you kind of give us some background as to you know, why that tool was built or what was the motivation to do something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically a little background of those of you who are listening in of what MS SQL Scripter is. It's a command line interface, or CLI, that can generate T SQL scripts for databases and database objects. So if you unpack that statement a little bit, you can use it on Windows, Mac OS, and Linux, and on SQL Server running anywhere, including Linux, SQL Azure, and SQL Data Warehouse. And the main motivation for this was it was a huge customer ask. We had lots of customers asking us for a scripting tool that they could specifically use in the command line. So this is very similar to the Generate Scripts Wizard, which we have in SQL Server Management Studio. It's the command line version of that. So basically what you can do is you can easily edit generated scripts because it's produced as a .SQL file. You can check it into your favorite source controls, such as Git, view visual diffs, which is something that customers had really, really wanted for their SQL database scripts. They also can then take those and execute the scripts in existing deployment processes and DevOps pipelines in conjunction with other tools like SQL CMD. And so the best part is you can really, you know, take these scripts and view them and put them in your pipelines.
So this reminds me, so back, you know, this is Evan, I was a SQL Server escalation engineer before I, you know, kind of went full bore into the hardcore Azure IaaS world. And I remember there were some .NET libraries to allow, you know, some of this. And it was always really, you know, we always had the request from customers, you know, I want to be able to mimic that functionality that was in Management Studio because they wanted to, you know, be able to kind of on their own script out their solution. So it sounds like this meets that exact need, but now it's kind of in a packaged product that I can take around to anywhere I need to.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the first of many. So this is the first of many command line tools that we plan to release. It's open source, it's Python based. So also we plan to have customers who come and build on top of this too. So those who have their own solutions can add functionality as well.
So how does the script work today? Like, so you said, let's suppose I have an Azure database, so you're saying I just point to it. How does it work? What kind of parameters do you have to pass it, for example?
Yeah. So let's say you have an Azure database, and you want to script out its schema and data. So the first step is to actually install the tool. And since it's Python-based, we have a pip install as in PIP. And so what you first do is you say in your command line, pip install msql-scriptor. And so what that gets you is that gets you the scriptor package. It also gets you a dependency on the SQL tool service, which in the background, that's how we're actually executing commands and querying the SQL database. Then what you can do after you install a scriptor is we have a few different parameters that you could specify. So the first is dash S, capital S, and that's your server name, dash U, which is your username, and dash D, which is the database name. So for example, if you have an Azure SQL database for wide world importers, you can put that in as name. And then to script out schema and data, we have an option for that, which is dash dash schema and data. The default is schema only. You can also specify data only. So really all you need is those four parameters. Press enter in your command prompt. It'll prompt you for a password. And then you script out what you have. That would go to standard out. This also is NICS compliant, so you can pipe it to sed if you're using Linux and or even to a file.
So do you, I mean that the you said I think you mentioned early on that you can use it to compare. I don't know whether you said compare. I know you said diff, but can that is that just diffing my schema and my data, or can I actually kind of diff it and then say, oh, hold, you know, hey, that's wrong. I need to push that one change. Like, does that kind of enable that, or do I, what I end up with is I end up with a T-SQL script that I can go run somewhere else?
Yeah, great question. So what you end up with here with MS SQL Scriptor is just the SQL script itself. It's a SQL file. The scenario that I mentioned is basically the next step is now that you have the script, what can you do with it? And that's the main scenario that we wanted to enable was the idea of source control with right. your script.
That's cool. No, that's great because that's, I mean, that's truly portable at that point, right? I've got my script. I can take it to wherever and do whatever with it I need to.
Now, from a protocol perspective, is this a standard 1433 port? Like, is there anything special about the way it connects to SQL?
Yeah, it's a standard protocol. It's the TDS protocol. So a little bit into the architecture here. You have your SQL server, which uses the TDS protocol to speak to an API called SMO, SMO, which is SQL SMO. Management Objects.
That's what I was trying to think of earlier, SMO.
Yep, so this is built on top of SMO. So then the tools team actually created a SQL tool service, which is a .NET API that sits on top of SMO. And then what we've created on top of that API, and the reason for the SQL Tools API is basically SMO doesn't allow queries. So we have the SQL Tools service to allow for queries to the SQL server in addition to admin tasks. And so then on top of that, we built a Python application. And so we're here on the MS SQL Scriptor level using that Python application to go down the stack. So in the end, the protocol is TDS.
Did, you know, so it sounds like you guys had to invest a lot in kind of the layers on top. Did we end up having to actually make changes to SQL to enable some of this? Or is this really, at the end of the day, this is just kind of doing traditional, normal SQL stuff that we've done, you know, for decades?
Yeah, so the part for MS SQL Scriptor that was different was the Python layer. So it turns out that SMO is actually what powers SQL Server Management Studio. And recently the team had ported that to .NET Core so that it could be a multi-OS cross-platform service when we went to SQL Server on Linux.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, so it's basically a .NET stack that eventually has this Python application on top. And that was the new part for us that we created. And we plan to do similar thing with having these Python applications for future CLI tools.
So, okay. So this tool sounds like pretty flexible or lightweight, even rather, because like I'm sure our listeners, some that have been around for a few years, know that in the past when we try to do things where we're using external tools to talk to SQL, it was like, well, we got to get drivers, and then that was a massive kind of undertaking. So this is kind of all self-contained, whether I'm running like a Mac or a Windows PC. When I do that install you mentioned, it does everything for me, so I don't need to do any kind of crazy driver dance or anything like that.
That's correct. Definitely have to give a lot of credit to the engineers who are working on this. They went through a lot of troubleshooting to figure that out. And yeah, it was actually, this is the first line of Python that any of our engineers had written. But essentially what they did is they have a dynamic reference to the SQL tool service, depending on which OS you're running, what your environment is, that goes along with that pip install.
Okay. I was going to ask Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, just to follow up on that, like from a lightweight perspective, I mean, I know in the past when we were doing similar operations, you know, at enterprises, they would say, you know, we built everything out and we've kind of built it. Now we want to basically either dump the schema and the data or just the schema. You know, what we used to do was basically go into Management Studio. So we'd have to have Management Studio installed, and then we would go in there and use the DACPack or backpack and kind of export it that way. This sounds quite a bit more lightweight, where I can just have this one tool and just say, oh, let's just go do it. I don't even need to go through a lengthy install or anything for Management Studio.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the goal here. So, I mean, those who are listening to the podcast right now, or if you guys yourselves want to go and try out the pip install, the only requirement prerequisite is Python 2.7.
Yeah, and what I want to say is, like, I know in our other command line tools that we've built, especially for cross-platform, we've used Node.js, and it sounds like in this particular case, we went with Python primarily because of that SMO component.
Yeah, that was a huge part of it. So the SMO component that we have. Also, just from an industry and functionality perspective, Python's really starting to become an industry standard for command line tools, and there are a lot of open source libraries that you can use to help build the tool. And also the other side of it was the community perspective. Python has a really strong community. We actually went and announced this right before we went to PyCon back in May, and it was great to see how supportive the community was about Microsoft going into that Python arena.
Wow, yeah, I'm sure that must have been interesting. Now, when you guys were trying to introduce the tool, you know, what kind of feedback did you get from people? Like, you know, maybe from the engineering folks, from the business folks using this about the tool?
Once they got past the shock.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Microsoft, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah, it sounds like our team is definitely the SQL Server shocker team. Yeah, so, some of the initial reactions were all very positive, especially because, I mean, the reason we built this was it was a big customer ask. Some of the feedback we did get, though, was, you know, people generated a script, and the next question was, now what? What do I do with it? And so the options are to execute your script through SQL CMD, which SQL CMD is a pretty old tool. So that was some feedback that we've gotten. We have plans to go and revamp SQL CMD now. Also about customers asking how to set up their DevOps pipelines with this. And our answer was, well, it fits into your pipeline already. And then the follow-up to that was, okay, but what should my pipeline look like? What's the best practice for database DevOps pipelines? And that's a huge charter of our team, is actually to really work with DevOps customers and show them how they can integrate databases into their pipelines.
Okay. Now, you just say that the tool can extract data as well as schema. I'm guessing it's not really meant for doing large-scale data extraction, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, it would take quite a bit of time to do that.
Okay. Good. So what do you guys see in terms of the roadmap, whatever you can share publicly for the tool?
Yeah, absolutely. So the tool's in public preview right now. So we have a public GitHub page, which is github.com/microsoft/SQL xplat-cli. Not the best GitHub repo name, but we created it before we had a name for the actual tool. And so what we plan to do next, other than creating other similar CLIs for MS SQL Scriptor, we're planning on bringing it to Azure Cloud Shell, as well as a module for Azure CLI, which is why we are really excited to have a chance to speak on the Azure podcast today, because that's a huge future of this tool.
Oh, yeah, having it in the Cloud Shell would be nice.
Yeah, I was just going to say that just occurred to me that, that you would never have to leave the Cloud Shell, potentially, you know, if we had this and a couple other tools, right? You could just be there forever.
Yeah, absolutely. And Evan had mentioned Azure CLI before. That's also widely used. It'd be great to have it in that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Tara, this has been really great. Thanks for educating our listeners on this very, very nice tool. And I'm sure it's going to be really useful for a lot of people, especially, I mean, I guess now with the DevOps model, everybody is a database administrator, right? It's not just the DBAs that use these tools anymore now. I'm a developer, and I have to use these kind of tools as well. So I think this touches everybody, and it'll be very handy to have. Okay, great. Any more questions for Tara before we wind up here?
No, this is great. Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Tara. This is awesome.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks again. Have a good evening.
All right. You too. Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.